Welcome to minute 35 of season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to finish off this week is Eddie Eith. Welcome back to the show, Eddie.
Well, the guys in these jackets with guns are scary, but I really gotta pee.
I think you just hold it in.
I think, yeah, that's probably the best course of action.
That would be my suggestion too. Just hold it in. But you never know. Maybe Mr. Gray will let you take a leak off the side of the train. Who knows? Anything's possible.
Sure.
All right. So minute 35 begins with Blue responding to Green and ends with Kaz wanting on. So we left things off yesterday with Mr. Green bothering Mr. Blue and interrupting him in the middle of his crossword puzzle and trying to get some sort of answer from him as to, is everything okay? And Blue just responds and goes, "Will you go back and sit down? I don't want Mr. Gray or Mr. Brown alone with the rest of the passengers." Mm. And he goes, "Why? Don't you trust them?" And he goes, "Yes, I trust Mr. Brown. I do not trust Mr. Gray. I think that Mr. Gray is an enormous, arrogant pain in the ass who could turn out to be trouble. I also think that he is mad. Why do you think they threw him out of the mafia?" So this is great exposition to tell us, first of all, who this character is, and also to tell us that, Mr. Blue knew all of this information, but still brought him on this heist.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What forced him to do that? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he basically, he's telling Green the same thing Dallas Cowboy Michael Irvin said of his teammate Charles Haley. He's got psycho problems. And I think it's basically, he's crazy. But if you want a good pass rush that can take out the quarterback, he's your man. I think Mr. Blue doesn't want people to die, doesn't want things to get messy. But if they have to get messy, then you need a person like Mr. Gray around, because he will have no compunction or will not think twice about killing someone if he has to.
Okay, that's actually interesting, but I guess maybe he misjudged him. Maybe he thought that it's someone that he can handle much easier. He's going to find out over the weekend that he can't.
Yes, yeah.
He's not going to find out on today's episode, but he's going to have to wait over the weekend to figure out exactly why and how Mr. Gray is a loose cannon when it comes to these type of things.
So absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I think we'll find out tomorrow.
We won't find out tomorrow because we're going to be off on the weekend. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you'll find out Monday. That's right.
That's right. If anyone looks ahead, then they'll know what we're talking about. But who knows?
Yes.
Now, here I have a question that I'm going to ask you that I ask most of my guests. Do you think that Mr. Blue is the one who put together this entire plan, or is this similar to Reservoir Dogs, where there's some big kahuna, like Joe, who then puts together a team and gives, all of these, he divvies out, the assignments to all of to these four guys, telling them what they're going to do, and that Mr. Blue is just the lead in the heist itself.
Now, I'm going to say
Mr. I don't know the answer to this, and we'll never know the answer. It's all speculation.
My gut tells me that Mr. Blue concocted this scheme. I don't know if you've read the Parker novels by Richard Stark.
No.
Parker's an exceptional thief. They were written,
I've seen some of the movies and I didn't really like them very much.
Well, yeah, the movies aren't that great, but the novels themselves are spectacular. But One of the things that's discussed in those novels is there's kind of this underbelly where if you need, because a lot of these types of robberies, you need funding up front, whether to get weapons or transportation or whatnot. And they have a system where you don't tell them what the job is, you tell them what the payout would be and what your upfront costs would be, and then they decide whether or not to cover it. And this feels like that kind of a job where he's concocted this scheme. He knows he needs four men. He's found the motorman who can hijack it, and he's got two goons, and he might have had some upfront money to get the weapons and the disguises that they needed, and the gear to take over the train, and maybe paying that, or it's upfront. But either way, I feel like this is something that Blue came up with himself and is running on his own.
Okay. See, I tend to think the other way, that Blue is the one in charge. Maybe he had the idea, but I still think that because I see that I have trouble believing that Blue was able to put these four guys together. Because of their diverse, like, how would he have found Green? Unless the two of them were like sitting in a bar and he happened to hear Green, commiserate about getting fired from the transit authority, and he go, "Oh, wait, one second."
I mean
maybe it was a good idea. See, that's like finding a guy from the mafia, finding Mr. Brown. I'm assuming that Blue has the talent to do that. But in order to do a heist like this, I mean, you need Mr. Green and you need Mr. Green's knowledge and innovation in order to be able to do it. Because Mr. Green, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, Mr. Green is the one who has the idea of how to beat the dead man's switch. Unless he was just talking about how do I do this, and then Blue gave him the idea of how to actually implement it. I don't know. That we'll never know. So we'll never really know how that works, but. So, okay. Again, as I said, we will never know the true history of how these guys met and got together for this heist.
And in a certain sense, I think that that's what's fun about it, is you don't need to know. And sometimes it's more fun to think about it in your head and fill in the gaps yourself as a viewer.
Exactly. Well, I mean, again, that's the way it is with a lot of movies. Some movies you want them to give you as much exposition as possible, and in others you want them to keep you guessing and make you fill in the blanks. There are pluses and minuses to both of that. They continue their conversation. Green goes, "Oh, terrific." It's a great response for the fact that he's now been told that this guy's a little bit out of his gourd. And then we see a group of we get another shot of all the passengers, and we actually see one of the women tapping her foot, which made me think of what your comment from earlier that you gotta go use the restroom. It gives me the impression that she's trying to maybe stive it off, that type of thing. So who knows? And then the shot changes and we see a view from the train down into the tunnel, and we see a figure getting closer. And then we see Mr. Gray just begin to whistle at him, and he goes, "Hold it right there, cowboy."
Turn around, Kaz. Please turn around.
And he goes, "Who are you?" And he goes, "You'll find out if you take another step." And he goes, "I'm warning you, mister. That's city property you're fooling around with." And Gray just screams back, "That's just too f-ing bad." And he goes, "Why don't you go grab a goddamn airplane like everybody else?" And this, I actually like Mr. Gray's response. He goes, "Because we're afraid of flying." Now telling you, clear out, or I'll shoot your ass off. And then Kaz screams back and goes, "Hell with you! I'm coming on board." And
No,
he
Kaz,
continues
don't
moving
do it.
forward.
Turn around. It's not worth it.
Again, I think it's I've always loved the character of Kaz. I think he's great. And also, I mean, we talked earlier about earlier this week about the fact that he's pretty fearless because he wants to get his job done. He doesn't think about the dangers. He's not thinking right now that these four guys are dangerous in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I think it just the thought does not enter his mind that there could be any danger here. I think that, I don't see, like, I don't know if that's bravery or small-mindedness. But yeah, this is definitely, Oh, it's tragic. It's tragic what's about to happen.
Yes, it really is. Again, I like Kaz, and but I think that they play this character out really well.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm almost screaming, like, and you have the cop who's roaming in the background there. Should he call out and warn him, or would that spook Ray into doing something into oh you know I mean that to me the cop I feel bad for is I feel like he's put in an impossible position where he ends up just having to watch this happen.
So we'll have to wait over the weekend to see how Mr. Gray handles this situation. We'll see it on Monday. But
Yes.
it's not looking good. Not looking good at all.
Yes.
All right. So did you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute or about the movie in general?
Well, I will say it's coming up later, but because it does have to deal with the character we were just discussing. To me, my favorite line, one of my favorite lines of the 1970s cinema, is Walter Matthau saying, "You listen to me, you dumb son of a bitch. You do what I tell you, you'll be having dinner tonight with Kaz Dalowitz." So, I hope you're all looking forward to that moment.
Definitely. We're things are getting more tense and more tense as things move along, which is great. The buildup in this movie is just done so well. There's no question
Yes.
about that. On both sides, both on the side of the of the cops and also on the side of the hijackers themselves. So I really like the way that they do this, and obviously that's one of the main reasons why I chose to do this movie this season, because it's such a fun way to look at things. And speaking of fun, so every Friday we have a segment called Fun City Friday. Did you know that New York had a nickname of Fun City at one point?
Vaguely, that does seem, I mean, New York's had many monikers, the Big Apple,
Yes.
the city that never sleeps, etc.,
Right.
etc.
I was just looking for something that works well
Yes.
with alliteration for Friday. So there you go. That's the way it worked. So I found Fun City,
Yes.
and I'm like, all right, we can do that. All right. So why don't you give me your top five movies that have some connection to New York City?
Okay. All right. So I need to preface this with a little bit of background that the narrowing down this list was much more difficult than any of the lists I've done for the show for this season or any other in the past. Just because I live in New York. I feel like there have been so many great movies that take place in New York, and I wanted to get a list that really showcases the city. And has the vibe that you get living here. And When I went through, the list, the initial list of possibilities I had were 62 different movies.
Wow.
And yes.
Okay,
And
so let's rank them all.
no. I need to give a shout out to my friend Bill Sweeney, former co-host on Wicked Theory, who I called up at 10:30 at night, the night before we started recording, to run through this list with me and help whittle it down. And we ended up having a three-way tie for fifth place. So
Wait, you're gonna give
two
me Bill's top five also?
no, this is my
Oh.
I mean, we kind of came up with this together. I have two honorable mentions, and to see the three movies that tied for fifth place are so different. You could see the eclectic mix that I was going for here. So honorable mentions are the 1947 version of Miracle on 34th Street
Okay.
and Uncut Gems from 2019.
Okay. Those are the two that you're not using, you're saying.
Yes, those are the two honorable mentions that I thought, that when it came down to it, it was a tough decision, but I feel like they're worthy of mentioning here. In fifth place is You've Got Mail from 1998, which I think is just a bright comedy that really showcases different parts of the city that you don't, especially parts of Manhattan that you don't see in other movies, different parts of Central Park and the East Side. Really, and just a genuinely beautiful story. Number four is Taxi Driver from 1976, which I think is probably Scorsese's best representation of the city. Really gives you a vibe of what the city was going through in the 1970s. Number three is Ghostbusters from 1984, the original Ghostbusters.
Is there any other Ghostbusters?
I have a soft spot for most of the other movies, but to me, just when you think it's that movie is it could not take place anywhere but New York. Number two is Do the Right Thing from 1989, directed by Spike Lee, which really just captures there's we don't really have spring in New York. It just kind of goes from winter straight into a summer. Spring might last 2 weeks, and then there's like the last 2 weeks of August, which are just terrible muggy humidity. And I feel like Do the Right Thing takes place on one of those types of blistering days, and is just another masterful depiction of Bed-Stuy Brooklyn. And number one is Dog Day Afternoon from 1975, directed by Sidney Lumet.
Anika.
Yes, which I feel is a spiritual sibling to The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Sidney Lumet to me is the ultimate New York director. Even the movies that don't take place in New York, you feel this sense of New York in them. And I think this is his best movie, and is absolutely, and I mean, going through, there's this run in the 70s where you have like French Connection, The Godfather, Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, Mean Streets, Dog Day Afternoon, and Taxi Driver, where it's just like unassailable, like those that could be a top five all its own.
Right.
But to me, in terms of like New York, and also the real sense of New York cops and, average day life of the working man in New York. It really gives you a taste of that. That was the New York that my parents grew up in and that my grandparents worked in.
Oh wow. Very cool. All right, so I'm glad that Bill was able to help you whittle that down to just five from 62.
Yes.
I'd love to offline see your list of 62, just out of curiosity. If you do have it written down somewhere,
You know what? I
you
don't.
can send it to me.
Unfortunately, I think I was doing it in Word, and I don't think I kept a draft with all 62.
So do
I
it
have,
again. There you
yeah,
go.
yeah, sure, yeah. It's fine. Yeah, no, I have all afternoon. Sure.
On, man. Things you wouldn't do for me. Come on.
All right. All I know is now is redemption time for yesterday.
That's right. There you go. All right. So thank you very much for that list. We will now play for one final time this week with you the Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel and see what movie you're going to get. Hopefully, it'll be something you've seen.
All right. Where does it land? Where does it land? Where does it land? Where does it land?
Okay. The original movie came out in 1938 and was remade in 1984. And the premise is an American college student spends a year abroad in England.
American college student spends a year abroad in England. Okay. Is the college student male or female?
Male.
Male.
Yeah, we're not talking about that recent movie that was terrible.
Okay.
Which I think was called, was it My Year in England or something like that? I don't know.
Okay, 1938. Spends a year abroad.
I think you should focus more on the one from 1984. That's what I think.
1984. Okay. Goes abroad. Can you give me a director?
I can. I don't think it's going to help you. The director of the movie from 1984 is Robert Boris.
No, that doesn't
And
help.
the director of the original movie is Jack Conway.
Nope.
The lead actor was Robert Taylor, along with Vivien Leigh and Lionel Barrymore in the original. And I have a feeling if I give you the lead actor's name in the one from 1984, it'll completely give it away, but I'll still tell you. It's Ally Sheedy and Rob Lowe. Does that help at all?
Is that San Elmo's Fire? No.
You apparently don't know
No. No. No.
your
No,
Brat Pack
I
movies.
guess I have a blind spot with the Brat Pack.
The movie is called Oxford Blues.
Oh no, I would have never gotten that.
Yeah,
Wow.
I remember seeing that. I was 10 when it came out, and for some strange reason, that's a movie I remember seeing in the theater. I don't know why. Like I don't know why my parents let me see it in the theater. I look at it from that perspective, but
Wow.
so the original one was called A Yank at Oxford.
All right. Wow, a complete whiff. I tried
Well,
hard.
sorry
But
about that.
as no, it's fine. As my father would say, loser.
No, I would never call you that.
All right.
All right. All right. So onward and upward. Just
Yes.
think about Kaz.
All right. This was fun. Thank you so
Yes.
much for having me back.
I do appreciate it. I always love having you on as a guest. You are a very knowledgeable guest that I love talking to. So,
Great.
it's always great having you on. So, thank you very much, Eddie. We will definitely have you back in the future. Kaz, we're gonna have to wait until Monday to find out if he's gonna be back in the future or not. Eddie, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure, Eddie Eith. I'm at on Twitter at Eddie Eith. That's EDDIEEITH.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieonminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieonminute@movierob.net. So everyone have a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday with a new guest, but until then, achoo.
Gesundheit.